Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 282. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I'm Mike Kaplan.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. You can buy my album right now. It comes out September 30th, but get it now. Pre-order it now on iTunes, specifically iTunes, so I can go up the iTunes charts and debut at number one. Or you can buy a signed CD. Go to turnersparks.com. Go to my website. I will sign it for you, send it to you, mail it to you. It'll be to you before the album comes out if you do it right now. You can find Kaplan at Cap'n America, on all social media platforms. Kaplan on the podcast today. We're talking to the great Ollie Horn. He is back. He will be with us in just a minute. He is touring Asia right now. He has a show coming up in Kuala Lumpur. Go to his website. We'll get that from him in just a second. Go to his website to get all the tour dates on that. But Kaplan, we're talking to Ollie in a couple minutes here about Liz Truss, the new prime minister.
Of where?
Of the United Kingdom.
They have a new prime minister?
Most people don't know this. Most people think the king is now in charge of the country.
Right. I saw a headline on Fox. It came through my alerts and it said King Charles inherits an economy in shambles or something like that.
Yeah.
And I said, he's got a lot on his plate. This guy, he just took over.
I enjoyed the his first statement, because I was always under, because all these in America, apparently everyone thinks he rules the country and the queen used to run the country. And I was pretty sure that wasn't the case.
Yeah, well.
But then I saw his opening speech and he said, everybody, because in my mind, he didn't really do anything. But he said, don't worry, everybody. I will do less than I did before. Do really not worry, which is a great way to start a new job.
Yeah, set the bar low. Set expectations. Make big promises. Like, we should have done that with our Patreon show.
Previously, when I didn't have this job, I might have dabbled in things that had to do with this job. I won't even do that anymore. I will literally do nothing. And everybody breathed a big sigh of relief. And which is also great when you're at a new job. I was like, oh, good. He's doing nothing. So anyway.
Well, I made the hack comment at home that I'm like, the guy's got his first job at 73. And my wife was upset with me. She's like, he was in the military. She starts listing me his whole CV. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize that these are real jobs.
That was a big American Twitter thing to go. Yeah. He has a job.
But anyway, there is a prime minister who actually is the elected, right?
head of state. And it's a great time for her because no one's paying attention to her. So she can just do whatever she wants.
She can get under the radar. Really good.
But before we get into her, before we get into all that, folks, all these people in America, you know, they're donating money for the Queen's funeral. There's a Patreon going on.
They're raising money.
They're raising money for the king. They go, you know, he has to work. So everybody, you know, give him some money. Forget all them. Give money to us. Patreon.com/lostinamerica. I know you're wondering where I was going, Captain. That's where I was going. It always leads back to us. Patreon.com/lostinamerica. We put this show out for free for you every single week. Thousands of people listen to it. Currently, 41 of you subscribe to our
Patreon.
Bunch
of deadbeats. Yeah.
Pitiful.
Pathetic ratio.
Thousands and thousands. We blame you. We don't blame us.
Yeah.
Why blame us? You know,
I mean, well, here's maybe the problem we should learn from King Charles. We've been saying we're going to do 2 and 3 episodes a week.
Oh, good
right?
point. Yeah.
Maybe we should promise less.
Yeah,
he's we'll coming out saying I'm going to do less.
If you pay us money, we'll talk less.
Yeah,
so how about that?
We'll do. Maybe people don't want it because
we'll
people
make it
like
more of a hostage situation. So the more you pay, the less we'll do.
Because they get annoyed with the feed. They feel like they're paying for it, and we're sending them all these episodes, and then they don't have time to listen to them. So maybe we'll do the other way around.
Yeah.
Pay us money, and we won't send you episodes.
That's a good point. We will do that. And for everyone watching us on YouTube right
YouTube.
Now, like and subscribe, smash the like button. I learned that from your daughter, Kaplan.
Boom.
Smash the like button, hit the bell, and look at Kaplan's shirt. He's wearing a shirt from England.
I'm wearing an England soccer. It's so cliche today. I'm wearing my England soccer jersey that I probably bought when I was not studying abroad, but you know, it's a study abroad thing to do. So yeah,
it really is, Kaplan. Now, what do you know about this new prime minister?
I mean, my understanding is we had this guy, Boris Johnson. He was a great character. I understand that, too. Yeah, he was like the Trump of England, although he was nowhere near as like radical. He was more in personality wise, the Trump of England. That's what it was. That's a better way to put it.
I think this
idea
had
hair.
We just decided because we had a Trump, then everyone else had a Trump. We're like,
he was a bit of a buffoon, like Trump's a buffoon, but he wasn't. There was a lot of other. Yeah. But he had a scandal. He had a couple scandals and he's out of office. And now they just sort of selected. I don't really understand this. They didn't hold a big election. They don't have a vice president. And obviously it's a parliament. So they just sort of the party heads got together and they said, hey, how about this girl, Liz? She seems like she needs a shot.
Yeah, it was like how China elects their new president. It's within the party. Only the
within
party.
The party.
Votes.
The conservative party says we're in charge right now. I guess they don't have to have new elections. We'll find out in a second why that is. And they just said, hey, let's vote for her. And she's not very popular. I read that she's like, nobody likes her. The majority of the population believe she's going to be either a poor or terrible prime minister.
Only a quarter of them think
she'll be better than Boris Johnson, I read.
So. Okay, but Myrna Sparks completely disagrees. My mother, because every time she speaks about the queen, my mother goes, she looks so nice. Oh, look at that. Oh, she's going to be great. She's going to be wonderful. So she's winning a lot of fans right now.
No,
anytime Liz Truss talks about the queen.
Oh, yeah,
she's gotten a lot of airtime globally right now. The world all knows her.
My only other thing I read about her was in her youth, she didn't like the monarchy. She was anti-monarchy, but she realized in politics, she was the only white woman who didn't like the monarchy, apparently. But she's come around. You know.
Well, you're judging that from America. So American white women love the monarchy. I don't know if that works.
It doesn't. We'll have to ask Ollie about that.
Anyway, you pretty much covered what I know. That's pretty much it. I know she passed an energy bill kind of under the radar that could cost more than 100 billion euro. I mean, not euros.
Pounds. They're in pounds.
Excuse me.
They don't know. No euro.
They fought a war about that. Yeah, sorry. 100 million pounds, which is more than the bailout that they bailed out the whole coronavirus. They're going to spend on energy.
They bailed out the coronavirus?
Yeah, they bailed out. It's 7 a.m. out here. You a-holes did the show.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm in California.
We should
anyway,
say, yeah.
Welcome to the show. Ollie Horn, where can we find out about your tour? Let's start there because you still have a couple shows left. This is coming out today. So I do know you're going to be very soon.
Oh, cool.
Thailand.
All of your listeners in Phuket, Thailand.
we have listeners across the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all of those lot can see me do a show this Friday. And then I've got one more left, which is a secret show that's happening in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia on the 18th of September.
Doesn't sound like much of a secret.
Tell you the location.
That's the thing. So, well, the location, you can DM me on my Instagram. My Instagram is Ollie Horn Comedy, OLLIEHORN Comedy. And the performer, right?
Wait, O-double-L-I-E-H-O-R-N
comedy. That's my Instagram. I'm just going to go watch this show. And the person that's going to be performing in the show is a guy called Ali Tanduk. Ali, A-L-I, Tanduk, T-A-N-D-U-K. Ali is, if a Muslim was called Ollie, that's how you'd say it. And Tanduk is the Bahasa Melayu word for horn. And that's what's appearing.
Wait, can
posters.
I ask a question?
So you have a Muslim stage name.
To perform in Malaysia, do you have to be Muslim now?
Right, look. We don't want to get in the weeds of this, but basically Malaysia's had a couple of issues with censorship, and I was associated with a comedy club that got shut down by the authorities because its owner presided over an open mic where one of the performers made some anti-Islamic rhetoric, and some of his jokes, although he is Muslim, he made some jokes about his Islamic upbringing, which some people didn't like. And so there are elections coming up in the country, and so he was made an example of, and so was arrested under the sedition.
This comedian we know was arrested.
I don't want to say too much, but basically he had to spend a night in lockup, and you know, he's on bail. In fact, we hung out in Singapore, and in order for him to go to Singapore, he had to go and plead before a court to get his passport, you know, to be allowed
and
to even leave the country.
Jokes, self-deprecating jokes about his own childhood. Kaplan, could you imagine if the Jewish lobby got so big in America that you weren't allowed to do self-deprecating
Jewish
jokes?
Well, I was
going to
say, that's culturally appropriating. There's real crime. Self-deprecation upbringing. That's crazy to me.
But anyway, he's a hero, and he's really bounced back, and he's still gigging. That's why
he's
such a
great
comic. He's still gigging. Rizzle Van Gaisel. I think I can say his name,
but you should say his name.
Well, no, I just wanted to say his name because I agree he's a hero, and it's terrible what's happening.
Yeah,
I don't really know what I can
and can't say, and I don't want to get him in trouble, but I'm presuming that anyone that's listening to this podcast is a good guy or girl. Therefore, if you want to come and watch him do a show,
we have a bunch of scumbags.
Really?
Let him finish his plug, Kaplan.
They don't pay you shit. I've heard that. I mean, we are charging for this show. If that's gonna put most people off. So I'm doing a show where he's gonna talk. He's gonna do his material, which is him reflecting on the case, and I'm gonna talk about the time that I kind of got stuck in Malaysia. Right. So the last time, maybe I think it was the last time I did this show, or the time before, it was when I was stuck in Malaysia during the pandemic, and I wrote an Edinburgh show about kind of my time before and my time after, and that's the show which I'm
can
now touring.
And we'll get into Liz Truss in a second here, but you just casually said, I was stuck in Malaysia, so I wrote an Edinburgh show about that. Now, for our audience around the world, writing an Edinburgh show means writing a one-hour stand-up comedy show.
Yeah.
How do you write one hour of comedy?
Do you know what? If you read the shorter review of the show, he does quite astutely say, hang on a minute, this is like 20 minutes of a club set, and then 40 minutes. Yes, of course it is. Didn't have time to write it, did I?
Okay, so it's 20 minutes of a stand-up set, and then what's the other 40 minutes? Kind of talking?
No, it is. We do have this discipline in the UK that a lot of comics just write a new hour every year. And so I would say the show is like 15 or 20 minutes of routines that I was doing in Malaysia about Malaysia, then slightly changed for an audience.
Sure.
And you know, you'd be surprised, right? Okay. Well, let's get into the weeds. At the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, you have to do an hour show. Realistically, the show doesn't run an hour. It runs for about 54 minutes, right? That's the kind of average runtime. Okay. You kind of pitch for 54 minutes because you try and have a 55 minute show to allow get in and get out. Typically you will have some like really solid club stuff that you've been doing in the clubs, which will make up at least 10 minutes of the show. And the rest, you would be astonished how quickly material just happens if you're not forcing yourself to write in a clubby style. So if you're not punchline after punchline after punchline, but allowing the audience to be taken on a little journey, you know, I the way that you write it is you do work in progress shows. So I book like a 45 minute slot at say the Brighton Fringe Festival or you know, a smaller club, and you walk up with notes and you just say to the audience, I'm going to muddle through this. And it feels like doing open mic for the first couple of times. If you remember that feeling,
you're doing open mic, but you're on stage for 45 minutes.
Exactly. And so by hook or by crook, you get laughs, and you'd be amazed how quickly, you know, now, like the hour which I'm touring, I've got about an hour and 15 of material that I can now pick from to construct the show, you know, and I'll pick and choose based on what the audience are feeling or, you know, what kind of mood I'm in. So like, you know,
well, because
the
you just left the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So you just did an hour every, you did that 54 minute show every single night. for 30 days.
I did
days.
That. Well, actually, wow. So this is the funny thing. That's the show I did last year. I did that as soon as I came back from Malaysia. I did that show this year. So the Fringe just gone. So in August, I didn't do that hour show. I did 5 different shows every day. I was hosting shows and doing compilation shows and doing some work in progress shows. So some of the material that I wrote in Edinburgh, I've now kind of snuck into this touring version of the show I did in Edinburgh. I mean, the thing is, the point is there are no rules, right? Like, so if someone buys a ticket for the show, they can't complain that it's like materially different to a show that I did 2 years ago. It's insane. Oh. So you just do it.
Yeah, you do whatever you want. I'm bringing back old bits I did like 5 years ago right now because I'm trying to write my new hour of stand-up. This is stand-up heavy in the first 15 minutes of this podcast, but that's okay. I'm trying to write a new hour of stand-up. My album comes out September 30th. I have 15 new minutes right now, but I'm going back to places that have seen me before. So I'm bringing back material from like 6 years ago and just punching it up.
And that's the thing. It's amazing, right? When you revisit old material, I'm doing a routine now on tour. I did this at Comedy Masala, which is a gig, you know, in Singapore. I did this routine in Comedy Masala and I remembered doing that routine for the third ever time, I think 7 or 8 years ago on that same stage, and obviously doing a fucking terrible version of it. And like that feeling of doing that, basically fundamentally the same routine, same final punchline. I remember it was Nick Milnes that gave me the final punchline, right? Who you know,
yeah,
doing that same routine, but now with like a skill set. And like,
it's so much better.
It feels amazing. It feels absolutely amazing. It must be like a chef coming out of cookery school for like 3 years and having the same set of like 4 ingredients and really knowing what to do with it rather than just like putting an egg in a microwave and, you know, sending a Facebook message to Umar saying, thanks for the spot. I'll be better next time. Actually, you know, right, before we move on, I hosted a show at the Fringe this year and there was an open spot. So for people that don't know, an open spot is you have a professional comedy club, but someone who's like, you know, progressing to paid work, they might do a 5-minute spot in the middle of the show or a 10-minute spot in the middle of the show, unpaid typically, or they get paid expenses with a view that the promoter can see them and maybe give them paid work in the future. And we had an open spot and he was just awful. He kind of phoned it in and he was just almost rude.
What's
to the
his
audience.
Name?
Yeah. So then I forgot it. I mean, you just blacklist them, right? So I went back on stage after and I just had to explain to the audience who, you know, who were at what they thought was a professional show. I went, oh, by the way, that was our open spot act. I don't like saying that before they come on because it might prejudice their performance, but
right.
You know, that was someone that we've got trying it
you
out.
Told the analogy.
Of course
by
I
the
did.
Way, this just sucks.
Yeah, well, I mean,
sorry about that. Was he still in the room when you said it?
Or is he? Of course he was. He had to hear it. Honestly,
it's good coaching. You got to give him the truth.
But the only way in which I could maintain credibility as a host was to go, well, you know, these things happen, just so you know, we have an open spot here. What that means is that, and then that's exactly the analogy I gave to the audience. I was like, it's just like if you went to a really nice professional high end restaurant and one of the diners said, let me into the kitchen, I'll have a go at making a souffle. And then not only were they rude while making the souffle, but also decided to serve that to a paying customer nonetheless.
Oh my God.
You understand that in America?
Was the guy, because I find that the ultimate bomb isn't when someone is just bad. When they're bad at comedy, the audience will feel sorry for them. It's when it's a bomb comes from when someone's bad and super arrogant and super confident.
He was acting as if he was above the gig, right? Because
That's a true bomb.
You know, it was unpleasant.
All right, so let's get into Liz Truss.
Speaking of unpleasant, yeah.
First of all, how did she get elected? Because we don't understand that part.
Yeah, who are the 20,000 people supposedly who voted? Who are the people?
All right, so you're familiar with the Sorting Hat.
Who?
The Sorting Hat.
The Sorting Hat.
You mean like everyone puts their name in a hat and it's like a raffle out and that's who's the prime minister?
Do you know what? That would be more democratic. Basically, The current government is made up of members of parliament from the Conservative and Unionist Party.
Yes.
Because they got a majority in the last election.
They had to do a coalition and all that stuff.
Exactly. Now, they, by convention, can ask the Queen, plot twist coming up, by the way.
Spoiler. I'll tell anyone.
Wait, don't tell me. I haven't watched the news.
Yeah. Haven't gotten to that season of The Crown.
I haven't turned on any channel on human earth recently.
Yeah. Just focus on
You haven't gone to a McDonald's where the touch screens have pictures of her face.
Can I tell you this? The McDonald's in America, the McDonald's flag is at half mast right now. I'm serious. Are you
serious? Ron McDonald's playpen is closed. It is.
There is some really batshit stuff.
Did she ever eat at McDonald's? Why would McDonald's mast be at half mast?
Of course she didn't. Right. So the Queen. But I'll just leave a little marker there, right? Because we might have something to talk about. The Queen can ask a minister to form a government, right? And that minister is the Prime Minister. And what our system's supposed to be is, it's like a cabinet government. So all the kind of important positions of states, like the Foreign Secretary, the Chancellor, education, all those people, right? They form a cabinet, and the cabinet is like the group of like, let's call them lead politicians, right? The people that, and the point is that they're supposed to kind of help set the agenda, and then they take it to Parliament to say, hey, what do you think of our fantastic ideas? And then generally speaking, the people in their party will go, yeah, brilliant, as I always thought. And then the people who are not in their party will be like, well, on balance, yes. And so that's how, you know, that's how legislation gets passed, right? If you've got a majority, that's why typically you'll be asked to form a government, because you've got the confidence of the House. That is to say, like, the system, we need good governance, and good governance is generally getting shit done. How do you get shit done? It's you can form a good cabinet, which can come up with good ideas, right? You've got a good executive, which comes up with good ideas that can then take those ideas to the House, to the House of Parliament, and then they can hopefully vote yes. And if you've got the most MPs, then they're obviously going to vote yes because of the whip system. Now, how did Liz Truss get in? Well, the Tory party ran out of people. Basically, they've been in government for now 12 years, yeah, right? So basically, so ever since I think it coincides with the year that I started uni, right? There's a comedian called Joe Lycett who said on TV that Liz Truss represents the backwash of the Conservative Party, which is basically they've gone through all the talent. They've got all the possible talent has been used now, and the party knows that they're probably not going to win the next election.
So they don't want to waste a good one.
Well, the thing is that there aren't any good ones. And so technically, I mean, I'm not sure this is really the answer you're looking for. Technically, the way she gets elected is the party has to choose a leader of the party. And by convention, that leader is the person who is asked to form the government, right? So Boris Johnson was the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party. Right. And by virtue of that convention, became Prime Minister because, he could command the majority. So the people that can vote for the new prime minister when there is an incumbent party in government are only members of that party, right? And so what happens is there's first of all a shortlist, and that shortlist is made up. And this is the interesting thing. Each party has its own rules on who becomes leader, right? So the Labour Party has a very different system, quite famously a different system, because one of the reasons that Jeremy Corbyn became the leader of the Labour Party was because you could become a member of the Labour Party for just £10 by texting in, right? So, you know,
if I text a number, I can get 10 and send £10 somewhere, I become a member.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing, that there weren't any checks on foreign members either. It was all a bit of a mess.
So I just can start voting.
Yeah.
Great election.
So American Idol. It's like how you vote for American Idol.
That's exactly it. So Liz Truss was one of five or six members of the Conservative Party who put herself forward, right? Then she had to get a signature from a certain number of MPs
I can't do
right?
that, yeah.
Well, exactly. There's a lot of work. And I think once you've got like whatever the number was, 30 or 40, then there's like a list of five of them. And then within the party, within the MPs, they then choose two people. And that was her and our former Chancellor, Rishi Sunak. And then the members of the public who are members of the Conservative Party, which is basically, imagine like they might as well have just held the ballot in golf clubs. That's basically
yeah. Who are these members? Basically, the Tory Party in the UK.
Performed. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
But
that's
that,
the
that
whitest
is,
room in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the only people that really can vote. And so Liz Truss is remarkably unimaginative, and she's like. I mean, she
this
she
is
really
not is, Margaret Thatcher, is what you're saying. This is not the this is not a revolutionary kind of.
Well, I mean, the only thing I'll say is Margaret Thatcher wasn't a revolutionary in her first week, right? It took her a while to make an impact. So maybe Liz Truss can pull it out of the bag. I don't think she will. I mean, everything I've listened to Liz Truss say makes me feel intelligent. And someone on Twitter described Liz Truss as whenever Liz Truss looks like she's thinking, her eyes look the same way as a pigeon would look. A Rubik's cube, and I think that like that sums it up perfectly. Like she doesn't like she's basically a career politician, and she hasn't really got strength in her convictions because, as Michael mentioned earlier in the show, or I'm not sure if we were recording at that point, she was a Republican and she spoke at a political event. On how we should abolish the monarchy. And interestingly, that political event was for a different political party. That was for a Liberal Democrats event. And yeah. She switched from the Liberal Democrats to the Conservative Party. And she supported Boris Johnson, despite the fact that Boris Johnson was the most, I mean, I don't need to explain, right? The most scandal-ridden, kind of morally corrupt, sloppy, slovenly, really disrespecting the office of prime minister, right? He really did use the role for his own gain and had a remark, like for someone who claims to be educated and worldly and kind of part of the upper echelons of society, he treated the office with a complete lack of grace and decorum. She nevertheless supported him because it was politically expedient. She managed to get to foreign secretary, which is insane. Like she shouldn't even be allowed a passport. She's that thick. And so she then manages to get to the top of government. And this is, by the way, if there's one thing that listeners kind of take from this episode, other than the fact that Turner Sparks's album is available for sale.
Yeah,
that's obviously priority number one. Priority number two is, right?
Good plug.
Liz Truss has been in government for the past decade, right? She was brought in and she's been in cabinet. And this is the important part, right? We don't have a presidential system, right? The prime minister is not the head of state. The queen is. Again, we're going to come to that. The monarch is, right? They're not the head of state. They don't have kind of executive authority that's different to any other member of parliament, really. I mean, they do have some extra executive functions. But generally speaking, the government is supposed to be done by cabinet. And the critical rule, the most important rule, like kind of the cornerstone of this system, is that everyone in cabinet agrees. So they're supposed to be bickering in private. And then the moment they announce policy or the moment one of them does something, there's this doctrine called collective responsibility, which is basically all for one and one for all. And the policy, and it's kind of gone now. It used to be an important part of our convention that you'd resign from the cabinet if you disagreed with what the cabinet was doing, or if there was another member of cabinet that brought that cabinet into disrepute. The kind of honor system was supposed to be: we're a team, and we just happen to have a leader, right? And that leader is supposed to be kind of a leader amongst equals. Liz Truss has been part of that team, a very senior part of that team for the past decade. And by any metric, the UK is in a worse position, right? Like child poverty is up, access to healthcare is harder. The pound is in a worse position. India has overtaken the UK as one of the top five economies in the world. We dropped. So by basically any metric, other than yacht owners, I think they've done a bit better.
That's a big metric though.
That's quite the metric.
Yeah. The yacht owner index. I follow it daily. I always check it.
But basically the UK has not, think about what some countries can do in a decade, right? Like, Tony, you've been to places like Mongolia, right? Think about what a country can do in a decade if they put their mind to it. Have you,
what has Mongolia done in the past decade?
I've never been to Mongolia.
The last decade?
I had you down as one of those acts that did that awful. Well, it's not awful. It was good. It was good because you were in Mongolia. But it was in the most unplayable comedy room in the world, which was a... there was a staircase, a spiral staircase in the middle of the room. So you'd be performing to an empty spiral staircase.
Wait, are you talking about the actual comedy club that's there?
Yeah.
Have you played
Mongolia?
That
no, wait, you're talking about Myanmar.
Oh, sorry. I am. I'm sorry.
I hope you guys have been in Myanmar the last decade.
Description of the comedy room.
Yeah, right. Sorry.
That's impressive.
Because I have played this room in Myanmar. Me and Kevin Jay and I played it together. That's where we met.
Brilliant. Well,
I've done it twice.
And the audience didn't realize what good a show they were getting. And anyway, the point, okay, well, fine.
Yeah.
It's also true. Well, Myanmar.
They haven't had a great decade.
Anyway,
Myanmar,
you were on a roll. Keep going.
They've not had a great decade. But think about what you can do in a decade, right? Think about what I've managed to do in a decade, right?
Right. What have you done? No.
Ollie's a big hit.
He's big.
He just made money at the Edinburgh Comedy Festival, which is almost impossible. He came out.
It basically is. So, right, we've not done well as a country. We've not got any, like, there's been no big new infrastructure projects. There's been no, like, the main thing we've done is, like, we've got Brexit done, which we keep,
Brexit.
we keep saying that like it's an achievement, right?
The term Brexit, we got deal.
How's that going, by the way? Is it been a big hit?
It really is. It's like imagine you're having an argument with your spouse. Right, about you've done nothing around the house. It's like, I put bleach in the pond. I put bleach in the pond. Right. And you're saying that, and you say it with a cadence as if it's a good thing. And you just have to go, yeah, well, you know, at least there's bleach in the pond now. And we've all, you know, and there were some people that didn't want bleach in the pond. But anyway, so the point was to return to the important point, which is Liz Truss should not be given any benefit of any doubt, right? She has been in government for 10 years. She's held really senior positions, and she's had the ear of Boris Johnson. This fallacy that this is like some kind of new start, right? Yeah. That she's got any right to claim, you know, the best analogy for the American listeners is... you know the sketch show, I Think You Should Leave? The hot dog sketch. We're all looking for the guy who did this, right?
I don't know that meme? I've heard of this show. I've never seen
it. Right. So basically, there's a hot dog car, a car made out of like a hot dog shape, crashes into a shop.
Oh, like a Wienermobile. Right? The Wiener Schnitzel.
A Wienermobile, right?
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. And they're looking around, wondering who might have done this. And then there's a guy that stood there in a hot dog costume going, we're all looking for the guy who did this.
Well, it's OJ looking for the real killer.
Yeah. Right. So the point is like she's been in the government. The hot dog.
She's the person in the hot dog.
And she the only one who didn't step down? Because a lot of people stepped down, right? When Boris was,
a lot of people. No, was... I mean, Rishi Sunak eventually stood down, you know, at the very, very last minute. Which is insane as well. Like him stepping down at the last minute is him going, oh, I've only just realized that Boris Johnson is an actual liar, right? Like that either means that he was tolerating his lies up to that point, or he's so stupid he only realized last minute.
Yeah, doesn't this work, happened with well him. After the January 6th insurrection, like the last like 10 days of Trump's in office, all these people from Trump's cabinet stepped down. They're like, I can't take it anymore.
Well, that's insane.
And that's what I thought was crazy. Cause I mean, what really did Boris in, right, is like a scandal involving one of the members who drank too much. And was it like a Me Too scandal, right? Somebody, fondled some women.
And of course the funny thing about, it's not funny, it's awful, but like the classic thing about that is, while all that was going on, Boris stayed in power, and also the MP was still an MP, right? It's like, although that was the scandal. But to be honest, it would have been anything, right? Boris was just, and I guess the problem is this, right? One of the reasons why the Tories have done so badly in government, particularly under Boris Johnson, but also under Theresa May, let's not forget that. I mean, Cameron, to give him his dues, although he made a catastrophic... David Cameron. Although
he made Cameron Crowe, turn of thought. Yeah.
although he made a catastrophic decision to do the Brexit referendum the way he did. And if anyone remembers... The kind of main point I made on that show we did about Brexit was the referendum wasn't a bad idea. Having it as an advisory referendum with a basic majority, but treating it as if it was a proper referendum with a a special majority was Cameron's big decision. So, and that decision was clearly wrong.
So it what
that
basically means 51%.
Yeah. So Cameron said it's only going to be advisory, like his way of making it not constitutionally meaningful, right? And not having to go through all of those checks to make sure that, you know, all the right people could vote. And, you know, there was, you know, maybe two votes taken over a period of a long time as other constitutions make happen. He didn't bother with any of that, right? Because he thought he'd win and he thought he just needed to get it done to bat the issue away, like he bat the Scottish independence referendum
That's
away.
That's quite the misstep. Mm. He clearly did his finger the on room. The pulse of the country.
Yeah, he completely and the thing is, like, doing the referendum is not a bad thing, but making it advisory was the big issue, because once you say it's advisory, you allow your opponents to treat it like it isn't, right? Yeah. And the moment the genie's out of the bottle, he lost control of the narrative. So Cameron at least did some fairly interesting progressive stuff while he was in government, right? You know, gay marriage, for example, big one. You know, some education reforms, which some people say were bad, but at least something happened, right?
That's what most reforms are in most things, to be honest. But try to do something.
But after that period, right, you've basically got a party which is just fighting within itself. And that's the issue, that they haven't managed to achieve anything of any merit or anything meaningful, because it's either a problem with Brexit they're trying to fix. So Theresa May was just paralyzed by the fact that everything she had to do was through the lens of sorting Brexit out. She didn't have any other agenda. There wasn't parliamentary time to discuss anything else, right? And I think the same is probably going to be true and obviously Boris Johnson was just internal scandals, whether it was who paid for some wallpaper or whether it was a former KGB agent is his friend and he's been going on secret holidays right. with him. Right. So like,
well, was anybody surprised by this, by the way? That's what I can't. It's like the Trump thing. It's like you sign up for Boris and now you're shocked by all these scandals that come out.
Well, exactly. Well, I think people mistakenly thought that he would respect the... Oh, no. I think what he thought was there was enough safety nets in government, right, in the civil service, that our kind of paper-thin constitution, which is like made of tissue paper, wouldn't be damaged. But it turns out that he just used that as a coaster for his bottles of beer while he was having parties while we all were locked down, right?
Yeah.
Basically, Johnson very, very quickly realized that he was kind of out as, you know, he couldn't do anything meaningful with his office other than bat away scandal after scandal after scandal, yeah. And also kind of keep the party happy. And if you're motivated by popularity rather than any kind of political will, that's what's going to happen. And unfortunately, Boris didn't really have, you know, I quite like politicians that really believe something, even if they're, you know, bad ideas, right? At least they're an opponent you can work with, right? Having an opponent which has the strength in their convictions, right? One of the kindest things an opponent can do to you is to make their argument clearly, right? Johnson only picked Brexit because it was the most politically expedient thing to do, and also some people might have given him money. Liz Truss has the same issue. She was anti-Brexit and now she's for Brexit. She was anti the monarchy, now she's for the monarchy. She doesn't really have any ideas that I can tell. The only thing that I think she's good at, because she's kind of got this like nouveau middle class, real respect for institution and authority and Britain and Paddington Bear and all that bullshit, right? She's probably in her element now. All this stuff like curtsying before a king and, you know, reading out statements that have been written by university grads, right? All that she's probably pretty good at. And also, like, she's now presiding over a parliament that's taken something like a 20-day recess because we all need time to be sad, right? So, like, she's
great. They canceled like, soccer games and everything, football matches and everything.
That's what the Queen would have wanted.
Yes. All right. We need to pause for our advertisements for a second, and then we'll be right back.
Oh, is it cereal?
No, it's not.
They're enemies.
I was about to say they dropped us. Let's be honest. We dropped them.
The cereal wasn't good enough. It's bad for you.
Yeah.
It's not good for you.
But if they want to come back, we'll change our
Why is Magic Spoon bad for you?
No, it's not bad for you. It's good for you, but we're not doing a Magic Spoon ad.
Because they're not paying us. Right.
Can I just say, if anyone wants to buy any Magic Spoon cereal, I've got a discount code.
They're not paying us anything. We are part of the World's Smartest Podcast Network. It is us. It is Ollie. If you ever start a podcast, I feel like you should get in on this network.
You should definitely be our
podcast. Yeah.
right up our alley. This is it is us, Lost in America, of course. You're listening to it now. It is the Political Orphanage with Professor Andrew Heaton. He is not a professor, but he sounds like he is. He's a comedian. It's Political Orphanage. This is a show for people who, if you're not on the left, you're not on the right, you don't have a party that you fit into perfectly. He will tell you what to think.
Yeah. I know Andrew Heaton. He came to the Fringe.
Yeah, of course.
He's like dressed smarter than he should.
Yeah, of course. He's got like patches on his jacket. You know,
he's dressed very nice, but his life's a mess. But he dresses great.
Yes,
he's a great guy. So he's got a podcast on your network.
He's one of our closest allies.
He's over at Studio A over there. We're at Studio B right now, but
he's really one of the closest friends of the show we have.
I liked him a lot. Also, my producer liked him because he was like polite in emails.
He's very polite.
Oh, he's great.
One of the politest.
He's one of our favorites. He's also a very popular podcaster here in the United States of America. And for a while, he lived out of a van. So people like that. But he would wear a three-piece suit when he came out of that.
He's in Estonia right now. I saw on Instagram wearing a three-piece suit singing karaoke. So
he's touring all over Europe right now.
He's really funny. He was really good. He did my panel show.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
So whenever I'm if anyone sees me perform in Texas, in the Midwest, anywhere, he's tours with me. He's my opener. And we're actually splitting a bill in Fort Worth, Texas, coming up in November. Crap, I forget the date. But anyway, go to turnersparks.com. If you're in Fort Worth at Hyenas Comedy Club, anywhere near there, Andrew Heaton and I co-headlining. And also, Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy, she actually is a PhD. She a
professor.
Has... Yeah. And she's a stand-up comedian. She has the Majoring in Everything podcast, which I will be on this week promoting my new album. All right, that.
You haven't got enough Turner here.
Yeah. A word from your local sponsor. All right, we're back.
Thank you, non-cereal local sponsors.
Yes,
unless it was a cereal. Thank you.
Magic
cereal
Spoon went really hard in some specific. Big geographies.
Great.
Thank you very much. All right. So so Liz Truss, here's my question. How long does she have in office before there's another election?
Yeah.
It's a couple of years. She's got a while actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, Johnson, I mean, that kind of, I think, right, explains some of Johnson's behavior that he thought, well, I've got it now. I've got it in the bag.
We can throw parties. We can do anything.
Yeah. Like I don't believe that Johnson had people around him that let him know that he needs the confidence of his own MPs, right? Like, he's not king, you know, like, you're allowed to protest. Unlike some people in the UK, we tried to do with bloody King. What's his name?
King Charles.
Charles, that's right, King Charles.
Wait, you forgot? Are you allowed to forget the king's name?
I think they're yelling at his brother, aren't they? That old Jeff Epstein's friend.
Yeah, the sweaty nonce. Well, actually, it's funny that we mentioned Andrew before the break. So Andrew was on a panel show that I host. It's called Not My Audience.
Wait, Andrew Heaton.
Andrew. I'm Prince Andrew.
Prince Andrew.
Okay, which one's the pedophile?
Well, they both are. But one is.
I know that one
of them lives in a van. That's a clue, right?
Yes, he lives in a van.
He's just an honest, hardworking American who happens to live in a van.
Yes, and he's always got
and
candy.
Give out candy to kids.
No, but the reason I mentioned it is this panel show, Not My Audience. Find out more at notmyaudience.com. We hand out pens to the audience to fill out. Like a little, like to write down suggestions for what they might want to hear stand up about.
Yeah.
And that forms part of one of the rounds. And we'd always have the pen stolen, right? Like, and so we looked at the production, we were spending literally hundreds of pounds on pens. We were sending production staff to go to Ryman's to get pens. And so I ordered 1,000 pens of our own. And I was like, what can I do to make these pens unstealable, right? Like, do we use pencils? Do we like attach them on chains? And I printed on them the Prince Andrew fan club, right? No one's going to want to steal that pen. So Andrew Hill, Heaton was on that show. So no, people have been protesting the king. And I think this is really, 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 really important, right? One of the reasons that we have freedom of speech, or rather one of the main reasons, is not so you can call a man who hasn't put enough effort to look like a woman in, you know, the wrong thing, which is what everyone seems to think freedom of speech is about, right? And we've got nut jobs on YouTube that have kind of that think that the only freedom of speech issue is trans rights. And it's sad because it's like the trans community didn't want to get caught up in this debate. And the freedom of speech debate is far more important than like anything to do with what we're calling each other, right? The reason that we need freedom of speech is because it changes our relationship with power, right? Like the reason why freedom of speech is an inalienable right, not a right. This is so important. Freedom of speech is not a right that is given by the state as a gift that can be taken when it's inconvenient, right?
True.
It's inalienable. It exists before the construct of the state, right? Like the social contract is predicated on us having freedom of speech to criticize the state. And so I don't want to sound hyperbolic, but I do think it's genuinely concerning that once King Charles was crowned and people started to make legitimate protest, which, by the way, is the only way that we can remove him. There's no constitutional way of removing the monarch unless there is some form of like civil disobedience, some kind of protest, some kind of like, if there's some way that we,
you're just saying it's gonna be a coup against him, like,
well, not a coup. I mean we don't have to do it French style with guillotines, but we just need to like withdraw our consent, right? Like the moment the king doesn't have public support, right, that's kind of where his authority comes from, right? Like historically you might say that the king or the queen got their authority through divine right. Right. You know, that was the old way of, it was like, God put me here. Right. But then it was like, well, hang on a minute. If God put you here, why do you need to fight all these other people that also claim that they should be in charge? Yeah. Right. And so then it became like, well, you know, the reason I'm king or the reason that I'm queen is because I control the army and I'm going to keep us all safe. Right. There's always a contract. And so freedom is, it was really important that we could protest because that's the only way that you can remove that. A couple of important points. It's very sad that Queen Elizabeth has died. And I know that a lot of people are mourning. And I also know that sometimes the death of a public figure such as Queen Elizabeth, it's not just the death of that individual, but it can trigger grief in other ways, right? People can reflect on their own life. So none of what I'm saying is looking to belittle the fact that there's, you know, genuine grief. And also sometimes these protesters, particularly when they happen in a public place, can undermine that period of grieving. So with that said, it's sad that she's passed. It's obviously a difficult time for her family, irrespective of the fact that some members of her family are paedophiles that she supported financially.
Yes.
Allegedly. So
send her a pen.
So she was
put a pen in the coffin.
She's the only one who'd want the pen.
Oh God, that's so funny. Well, King Charles would want a pen. Have you seen that video of him signing the struggling?
I love the getting it wrong that he's a prick.
He's got one job. In fact, no, Prince Charles. Sorry, not Prince Charles. King Charles has two jobs, right? Signing things and waving. One, he's got some kind of kidney problem, presumably because of alcohol. That he's got like really bulbous hands.
I'm, he's not got sure sausage seen fingers. I've seen it. Yeah.
Look at pictures of his hands. So it's like he can't wave without people going, sorry, can you stop waving? and then like he's the only member of the royal family where you don't want to say hands where I can see them, please.
Well, it might also be because of his parents or cousins. I mean, all due respect to the queen, but aren't they cousins?
Well, look, whatever it is, he's got hands that you really want to stare at. And then the other thing he's got to do is like sign things. And there's two clips in the past week of him getting angry with a fountain pen.
He's like a generation. He's not used to signing things. He likes to type. He doesn't like.
Well, whatever it is. Also, let's just remember that, especially after the discussion we've just had about Liz Truss, who is not our head of state. She's not our representative abroad, although she was foreign secretary and did a pretty bad job of it. The head of state's a really important job. Right. Like it's really important for diplomacy. It's really important for like a sense of public focus. There's a reason why we support the institution of a head of state. And so it's important to have one in some capacity. Right. France has a president and a prime minister. You have an elected. Who's yours? Ronald McDonald or something, isn't it?
Kim Kardashian. I don't know. Who's our royal Kardashian?
Yeah. But the point is, like, there's a reason why we have a head of state, because, you know, we need some kind of like public myth, right? And they represent it. So he has got an important job, but this is absolutely the moment. Now, Queen Elizabeth has passed, to say, well, we might have liked her, but do we like the institution? Right. And there are some people that have legitimate concerns about the institution. Some of them are about money, some of them are about legitimacy, some of them are just about the fact that it's just an old fashioned way of doing things that doesn't represent
some of the people I heard were racist.
Well, sure. Look, I mean, there's lots of reasons to want to become a republic or to change the role of the monarchy. I mean, some people would be happy to have a kind of a Japan style where they have genuinely ceremonial duties only and they're kind of self-sufficient, right? So, you know, whatever shape the monarchy might change, this is definitely the moment to talk about it, right? It wasn't pleasant to talk about it while the Queen was still alive in her later years. So this is obviously the moment, right? But there have been people with signs saying, not my king, and they've been arrested. In fact, someone was arrested for holding a blank piece of paper. They've been arrested? Yes, yes. There have been three separate
instances. What's the charge?
Public order offences. So yeah. if you're likely to... So in Scotland, it's a slightly... more draconian law that if what you're saying is likely to cause offense, that can be a charge. Wow. Whether they're prosecuted or not is another thing. But it's really bad. So the guy that shouted out about Prince Andrew saying you're an old whatever he said he was.
Yeah. Dirty old man or something like that.
That guy got arrested. And also the police officer that arrested him watched someone assault him. You know, as he was being pulled out of the crowd, some guy was like, you know, pushing him. And then, yeah, people have been protesting the king, not my king, and they've been arrested for that too. Now, look, there's an argument to say, be respectful of the mourners, whatever.
Yeah, but his mother did just pass away.
Well,
King Charles.
But he's, you know, this is the moment of his ascension as well. You know,
It's like people are like, if you want to disagree with Prince Andrew being a pedophile, that's fine. But pick a different time. He's not in public any other time. It's the only time, as far as I mean,
one of the arguments I've seen, which seems like a credible argument, is that, well, he's at his mother's funeral. Let him mourn. He wasn't. He was a public procession. I'm sure if he wanted some quiet time for reflection or if he wanted to be part of a private funeral service, he could. He chose to nonce his way down the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, which is actually like where all the flyering happens for the Fringe. It was such a delight to see crowds of people. It is possible. Yeah. That street. Man, it's such a relief that the Queen didn't die 4 weeks ago. Because if this happened in the middle of the Fringe,
it would have screwed up your whole
absolute carnage. Gosh. Yeah.
She waited.
The opener guy went and got his spot, whatever.
She waited.
Well, some people, you know, someone did say that, you know, death happens in funny ways. And so I think a lot of us have a memory of a relative who has passed after a really important moment. You know, we hear stories of, well, they died just weeks after they met their first grandchild, or, you know, they died just after an important anniversary. And I'm sure that our bodies are capable of doing that, right? You know, I don't believe that's pure mythology. And, you know, the Queen clearly does have an important sense of duty, and whatever her job is, she was clearly good at it. So, you know, the fact that she kind of waited for Liz Truss.
She waited for Boris to leave.
She couldn't. She couldn't die with Boris in charge.
But basically, I mean, you know, I don't know. Someone said that, and I thought, well, that kind of makes sense because it was literally days after. And so, whatever those last energy reserves were, that was her last important formal royal engagement.
To hand it over to Liz Truss. Yeah. Well, she wanted 15. Yeah. I think she was. I think the number is 15 prime ministers she have been under. Is that correct? It's an even number.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's got to be a record, right? I mean, no one's.
Oh yeah, and she's the longest serving monarch, and she probably will be.
I mean, that's one of the great records in sport.
Plausibly, she came to the throne age 25, right? The next in line to the throne is the son of King Charles, and he's already in his 40s.
Yeah.
So it won't be him who's the longest serving monarch, and then after that is some children. If you want one credible argument, right? About why, if we think that the head of state is an important job, we shouldn't have a shortlist, which is currently, if King Charles dies, it's a former helicopter pilot, then after that, a child, after that, an even younger child, then after that, a podcaster.
After that, an American.
Wait, yeah, Meghan exactly. Markle, is she on there?
Yeah.
She's the podcaster?
Well, no, she's married to a podcaster.
Her husband, yeah, exactly. He's a podcaster
Our
too.
American prince.
Competition to us in the podcast charts. So if they ascended, they couldn't host the podcast anymore.
Here's all I want to say is if McDonald's went to half mast of their McDonald's flag for her, how low do they go for Trump when he dies? Because he actually ate McDonald's.
He's an actual customer.
Well, I must say, although I wasn't in the country for this, and I like it when big moments like this happen when I'm on tour, because I think I would have gone mad watching it unfold in the UK.
You just said something, the wrong thing to people.
Well, and also I generally, I'm kind of like suspicious of how quickly mythology is created. So like, there seems to be this nexus now between Paddington Bear and the Queen, because
I was wondering where the Paddington Bear thing was.
Yeah, what are we talking about Paddington Bear?
Well, basically, like, I don't really know why. She was in some sketch with Paddington Bear, or any CG. Paddington Bear doesn't exist,
is
right?
Cartoon?
He's a little bit of an overrated bear, I gotta say, because people have been telling me about Paddington Bear. My kids care less.
Paddington movie is pretty good, and there's a statue of Paddington. And the reason it's called Paddington was because he was found at Paddington Station, which is a railway station.
That connects
London to Bristol and the Southwest and beyond.
He likes marmalade sandwiches.
Is that their commercial?
Darkest of Peru.
And beyond. No, it should be there, shouldn't it? Paddington Bear's like, and I suppose there's a certain strata of British society which kind of believes that this kind of twee, welcoming Paddington Bear's an immigrant from Peru sandwiches. Yeah. like he wouldn't be sent on the first ship back to Rwanda.
He's from the darkest Peru. Yeah.
To Rwanda.
Oh, you don't know about this?
I don't even know what Paddington Bear is. I'm so lost.
I might have one in my apartment. I go find it.
Paddington Bear's not from Rwanda. He's from Peru. But there was a scheme to send migrants that had crossed the channel by boat straight to Rwanda for processing. Jeez. And the reason that Rwanda
was this?
This year.
Oh. What?
You don't know about this?
No.
Man, this sounds like the kind of policy that was dreamt up as kind of a laughably evil idea in the back of a taxi. And that's obviously what happened. It was like some Tory going, what can we get good headlines? Send immigrants to, that's the first wheel spinning.
Ad libs.
Send immigrants to, and then, you know, insert name of a country that sounds bad, Rwanda, right? And it's like, you know, what do you associate with Rwanda? I don't know, genocide? Yes, great, right? So that's obviously what happened. Well, yeah, I mean, but not in the mind of a Tory. So, so there was a policy basically to send migrants to Rwanda for processing over and over. Awful, just a terrible policy. Anyway. Paddington Bear, the point is, she's now linked. Oh, we were talking about, I'm glad that I'm not in the UK, because this mythology has happened in real time, that now people are leaving marmalade sandwiches outside Buckingham Palace because that was Paddington Bear's sandwich of choice.
So she liked him? I don't understand. She just did
it.
She
was in one sketch.
Oh,
for something.
Got her acting credit. She gets her.
Yeah. And it was like for her Jubilee credit or something. Right. And so all this kind of like twee, you know, I kind of think that there's some people which have gone pretty mean about the Queen. They've kind of gone, well, she presided over Britain when it was still an empire. And, you know, she's got blood on her hands because of what happened under her name in Ireland, because of what happened in her name in certain parts of Africa. And it's kind of true that, you know, 10, 15 years into her reign, there were still atrocities being carried out by, you know, members of Her Majesty's armed forces. You know, is she responsible for all the atrocities committed under her name? Well, probably not. What could she actually have done about it? But you know, also, she was the queen that kind of presided over the end of an empire as well, right? So, you know, there's also that.
Yeah.
So I think some people have gone pretty hard on her, and there's been some quite vicious stuff on Twitter about how, you know, she represents the worst of imperialism. And there's credible. That's kind of true, right?
There's a middle ground is what you're saying.
Well, I guess the point is that there are people that have kind of gone the other way, which is like she represents the best of Britain. And there's this kind of version of Britain, which is like in the 1950s where, you know, I don't know, she got us through the war or whatever nonsense. You know what I mean? It's like
MAGA for Britain.
In the 1950s?
Exactly. So, but she's used
She was in power during World War II, right? Or was she?
No.
No, oh, wait, she, no. No, no, no. No, bollocks.
When did she come to power in the 50s?
She predates Churchill by age, right?
Right. That's what I was. Yeah.
But not by power.
Hang on. Is it by age? No, not by power. No, no, I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, right, right. I saw that movie.
When I say she got us through the war, I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah.
The point is, like, there's a kind of the Vietnamese War, when
the Sinai crisis, the Suez Canal, the Suez crisis, right? Yeah, England got involved in that.
But the point is that there's a kind of using her as a projection for quote unquote the best of British, and we've seen, you know, we're seeing this happen in real time. This like link between marmalade sandwiches and the Queen, and it's like the marmalade sandwich is representing
that's
how
like
good
poor
Britain is.
Immigrant food. Who likes marmalade? Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, not even that. It's kind of sad that like we're in the middle of a like a proper crisis where food banks are like there's more food banks than we have money now.
People are wasting food on a.
Yeah, it's really sad. Also, food banks are closing on the day of the funeral. So much is closing on the day of the funeral. Wait, it's insane.
Wait, food banks are closing?
Homeless shelters are
like, if you're a homeless person,
out.
You can't get a meal?
Well, I'll tell you what. So Center Parcs, which is a leisure resort, was going to close for the day of the funeral for no good reason at all. They were going to say, you've got to check out of your hotel rooms at 10 a.m. You can come back and check.
Turner, is the Friars Club closing?
I'm sure the Friars Club's closing. chance to close. The day of the funeral. Here's a question. So, and maybe we can end on this, but Liz Truss, the war in Ukraine has, you guys, your energy, you have like an energy crisis going on right now.
Europe
as far as I've read. And the one big policy thing she has done, and she did it hours before the Queen died, so it hasn't really been talked about much, but she committed to freezing the price of energy through the winter so that people were not going to have to go without heating and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Right?
Which is going to cost estimates £100 billion, which would be more than was spent on the whole, as we talked about earlier, on the whole coronavirus bailout pandemic. What will she rule? It looks like not. She'll still support Ukraine. Does it seem like that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, definitely.
Boris was good on Ukraine, right?
Yeah, he was good.
I mean, Boris went to Ukraine whenever he was feeling sad and wanted a bit of purpose. Yeah. He got a warm welcome.
He just walking the streets of Kiev.
Honestly, he would rather be walking down the streets of Kiev, likely to be bombed to smithereens, right? Because that for him felt safer than being in his own cabinet room. Sure. Liz Truss will definitely continue. That because again, you know, foreign policy is not just decided by the prime minister. That's the point, right? Like, you know, foreign policy is definitely decided by the office of president, right? Foreign policy is decided generally by cabinet, right? So yeah, 100% the support for Ukraine is continuing. The wholesale gas prices are not high just because of what's going on in Ukraine. I think that's a useful narrative.
Yeah.
It seems to not be true. She hasn't frozen prices, right? What she's done is she's basically said, whatever the energy companies are going to be charging, right, the government will pay the rest after a certain cap of £2,500.
Yeah.
Now, we had something called an energy price cap, which is basically we've got a whole bunch of energy companies who weren't allowed to charge more than a certain percentage above the wholesale gas price. They weren't allowed to charge customers a certain amount of money. And that price cap was renewed every 6 months, right? The point being that it was protecting consumers. Then what happened was that price cap was changed. It kept getting higher in order to not let the energy companies go bust, because some energy companies did go bust. What Liz Truss has done is kicked a tin can down an alley. Like nothing has actually been achieved by this, because she's got no control over the wholesale gas market. And she's taking a bit of a bet that prices aren't going to go even higher, right? This is only $100 billion now, right?
Yeah.
This is at the time when when energy companies are still making profit, remember, right? And so, look, the most radical thing she could have done would be to nationalize the energy companies, for the state to buy the energy companies and say, fine, we're buying you. If you're going to make profit,
that would be very Tory of her, I don't believe.
That's not what Thatcher would do. So that's obviously not an option to her, even though I think it's probably a good idea. There isn't an easy solution, because, you know, what really should have happened was, you know, there's that like Chinese proverb, the best time to plant a tree is 10 years ago. The second best time is now.
Yep.
We should have opened nuclear power stations 10 years ago. We should have properly invested in renewables 10 years ago because the Tory government has been in power all this time. You know, that 12 years is long enough to have basically any meaningful ownership of our own energy. Don't forget, the reason why the gas wholesale prices are important is because sometimes that gas is used to generate electricity and we're not generating electricity using other means. So we've got an issue with the gas wholesale price, which is affecting everything else.
And Putin you said Russia, he is like cutting off how much he's giving to Europe, right? I mean, that's why, like, he's like Germany and other countries.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, clearly it's affecting the markets. There's no doubt about it, right? But globally, there's still enough energy to go round, right? It's just that it's like it's a geographic problem because gas does have to be sent through a pipe. Liz Truss has done something, right? Which is obviously better than doing nothing. But this, a major criticism of this policy is that it affects everyone equally. So the richest in the society who don't need the price cap are benefiting from it too. But crucially, the energy companies can still make profits, right? And so it's like the government is basically subsidizing those energy companies' profits. And ultimately, we're still all paying for it.
Which means tax dollars are subsidizing.
Yeah, exactly.
The government means you.
And of course, the issue is that we've now got a weaker pound anyway, right?
Yeah.
And that's only going to get worse. So it's going to be even more expensive to import energy in the future. Look, I actually think now is the right time for Liz Truss to become prime minister because she's so devoid of kind of any credible political ambition. Like, it's better that she's just like managing a series of crises until the party comes to its inevitable demise. The current Tory party is made up of two factions which are irresolvable in their tensions, right? The pro and the anti-Brexit party. Mm. It's really sad to see someone like her who has spent her whole life trying to get this job. But like, it's better that she's got this now because at least narratively her legacy is going to be, well, she inherited Boris Johnson's premiership and the, you know, war and all, you know, the energy crisis and whatever else, you know, that's probably the kindest thing I could say about her. Yeah. But I mean, she's all she can offer, right, is the Tory party manifesto that they presented at the last election. She can't actually offer anything new, right? She, like, constitutionally, she can't. She can't go on a bender. No.
She inherits the playbook.
They say you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. That's what they say in Texas.
Is that what they say? Out west where you are? So you're saying in 2 years there'll be an election. We'll see how she did. We'll check back in. We'll see if Corbynism or is the Labour Party going to have, like, a come to its senses and have a good alternative in 2 years?
Well, the Labour Party, this is a whole other podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, that'll be another podcast.
Yeah. We'll do that next time.
We've got Keir Starmer, who is unlikely to be able to win an election.
Mm. So more Tories.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
All right. Well, I think that's it. I think Ollie's run out of steam.
He's run out of gas. I'm tired. Just to be clear,
it is like 11:30 at night. Ollie's got to go to bed, drunk. Everybody.
You've done some fantastic blowharding today.
This has been a great episode.
True tour de force.
I think the next time I do this, I should like get even more sloshed. I'm only like three cans in. Yeah. You know?
For our audio listeners, you've been chugging. I was going to ask what you were drinking earlier. I forgot. But what is that?
This is mad. I'm never buying this ever again. This is Home Garden. So far, so good. Botanic, all right, you've piqued my interest. Lemongrass and citrus zest.
Because
a lot of Thai food has lemongrass in, right, which I really like. And this is absolutely awful, but I just don't want to waste it.
Wow. Ollie, I'm going to do this to you, and this is a personal promise. I'm going to get you on Andrew Heaton's wildly successful Political Orphanage podcast. We're going to do that.
Yeah. I'd love that. And I'll get sloshed for it.
That'll be great. All right, that is the show, everybody. Ollie Horn touring Asia right now. Buy him a beer that's not made out of wheat.
Go drink
grass.
A Singha. Get him a Singha. That's a good Thai beer. Right?
Singha.
Singha. Isn't that a Thai beer? I'm trying to remember. From my month. Anyway. But anyway, buy him a different beer.
Buy him a beer. Yeah, that's it, everybody. Ollie Horn, thanks for doing it. Check him out on tour, everybody. OllieHorn.com, I believe, is the website. Kaplan. That's it. What should we do?
On that note, let's get lost.
Get lost. Oh, and go to TimesSquareGossip.com. Get lost.
And buy your album.
Yes, get lost.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.